The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And this evening, I wanted to show you a slideshow that I put together for another occasion, but I thought it'd be nice to show it here, and I thought also it might be nice to do something a little different, and not just a Dharma talk, but a Dharma sight, something. And can you see all right with the way it is now, or should we turn some of the light off a little bit? Would that help a little bit? Maybe if someone... Or dim them, maybe Jim knows how to dim them. Oh, you need a light?
Yeah.
Oh, so we shouldn't do anything?
No.
Okay. Okay. But hopefully you'll see.
Light on yourself.
Yeah. So this is a presentation on loving kindness. And so before I show you the slideshow, I'd like to read you opening of this book that I have. It's about love. It's called Defining Love. And it's written by a Western theologian kind of person, but it explores philosophical, scientific, and theological aspects about love and what might be, kind of from a Western perspective, Western theological perspective. But he had an interesting opening, I thought. In 1974, the National Science Foundation awarded Ellen Burscheid and a colleague $84,000 to better answer the question, what is love? Burscheid convinced the foundation to award the grant by arguing, we already understand the mating habits of the stickleback fish. It's time to turn to a new species. The species she had in mind was human. Burscheid's research might have gone unnoticed if not for the response of Wisconsin Senator William Proxmire. I'm strongly against this, exclaimed Proxmire, not only because no one, not even the National Science Foundation, can argue that falling in love is a science. Not only because I am sure that even if they spend $84 million or $84 billion, they wouldn't get an answer that anyone would believe. So I'm against it because I don't want to know the answer. Apparently, ignorance really is bliss. Proxmire presented Burscheid with the first of his Golden Fleece Awards. He considered the study of love a supreme example of wasteful government spending. Better to spend money on national defense or other such big-ticket matters. Proxmire's advice to those who funded the grant was simple. National Science Foundation, get out of the love racket. A few came to Burscheid's defense. A New York Times writer, James Reston, replied that funding grants to study love would be the best investment of federal money since Jefferson made the Louisiana Purchase. Apparently, Reston's retort fell on deaf ears. Financial resources for the studies of love, like the one Burscheid envisioned, remained meager. Few scholars would assume the label of love reacher after the incident. But there was one researcher, philosopher, studier, who was kind of a pioneer for the study of love, research into love. He started, I think, in the late 40s, 50s in his work, a man named Pityrim Sorokin. And in 1954, he wrote this. At the present juncture of human history, an increase in our knowledge of the grace of love has become the paramount need of humanity, And an intense research in this field should take precedence over almost all other studies and research. Considering the immensity of this task, my contribution is very modest in comparison with the sum total of the necessary studies. Since, however, the better brains are busy with other problems, including the invention of means of extermination of human beings, and many a religious leader is absorbed in intertribal crusades against various enemies, under these conditions, somebody, somehow, must devote himself to a study of the miracle of love. I thought that was fun. So to study love. Now, human beings have been doing this for a long time. I mean, involved with love. Trying to figure out what it is and how to get it and how to keep it and such things. And it's been a huge part of religious traditions. Many religions emphasize how important love is for them. And usually they distinguish between different kinds of love, because usually most religions don't want to be too involved with romantic love. And so they have other things they have in mind. But love still is a wonderful ally in human life. There's forms of love that are really essential to human life. Parental love, familial love, neighborhood love, love for our fellow humans. And it really is a miracle. Amazing things can happen through it. So in Buddhism, love is a big deal, because the practice of love and the virtue of love, the acts of love, are held up in very high esteem as being a very important part of the religious life. If you read the ancient texts of the Buddha, when he talked about the meditation practices of his monastics, and kind of gave some details of what meditation practice they actually probably the most common example he would give was the example of his monastics practicing loving kindness. Much more than mindfulness of the breathing, mindfulness of the body, probably more often than talking about mindfulness. And there was a high expectation that his disciples would be practicing a lot of love, not just acting on love, but cultivating and developing it. And so what we find in Buddhism for 2,500 years is a particular kind of, I don't know if we want to call it science, but a technology or techniques, not to just live with a love you happen to have, but to cultivate and develop a capacity for love, for loving kindness, for compassion, for joy, loving joy, to a high degree, such a high degree that the tradition calls it a couple of wonderful attributes. One is love becomes boundless, immeasurable, and the other is that it involves a liberation of heart. The liberation of the heart based on love, on loving kindness. It's a beautiful thing. It's somehow to free the heart, liberate the heart in the act of love. And so down through the ages, this has been an important practice for Buddhists. It's an important reference point for Buddhism for understanding ethics, how the decisions we make of how to live in our lives. What's the kind thing to do? What's the helpful thing to do? What's the friendly thing to do here? In situations where it's not clear what the ethical decisions might be, for Buddhists, that's often a very important reference point for their lives. And as some of you probably know, I'm sure, that the Dalai Lama, has ended up on a bumper sticker where it says, "My religion is kindness." It's quite a powerful statement for a religious leader who's so strongly identified with Buddhism to not say my religion is Buddhism, but to say my religion is kindness. And so that makes it accessible to many people. So we have this slideshow. Let's see. I don't know what the computer's, there it is. So we start there. Oh, let's see. Loving kindness, Metta comes to the West is the title. And so Rob is filming it all. So if it works, we'll put it up on as a video someplace. But so So it belongs to the Buddha. It comes from his time. The Buddha put a great emphasis on the importance of love. And here is some poem from the Dhammapada. A monastic, dwelling in loving kindness, and pleased with the Buddha's teachings, attains happiness, the stilling of formations, the state of peace. The state of peace sometimes is held as the synonym for liberation. And here it begins by dwelling in loving kindness is the kind of stepping stone for this. A very famous poem also from Dhammapada. Hatred never ends through hatred. By love alone does it end. This is an ancient truth. And this verse is repeated a lot, and it's a very important, powerful verse that's used in many places in Buddhist Asia. After 9/11, you know, people were quoting religion left and right, and this is probably the most quoted Buddhist passage that was, you know, running around at that time. There are a lot of different kinds of love, and Buddhism spends the most time championing four kinds of love, and those four kinds of love are sometimes represented by this four-headed being here. This is the god Brahma. And Brahma, this god Brahma, who lives in some high heaven, is supposed to be the epitome, or I don't know if it's epitome, or the embodiment of these four kinds of love. And these are loving kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. Equanimity being a particular kind of equanimity, it's a kind of love. And so in some of the statues, Brahma is depicted with four heads, four faces, one face for each form of love. This is a Thai statue. So here they are, the four. Metta, loving-kindness, Karuna, compassion, Mudita, appreciative joy, and Upekkha, equanimity. Here's a simple definition of them. Loving-kindness befriends all beings. Compassion cares for all who suffer. Appreciative joy rejoices with all who are fortunate. Equanimity loves peacefully all who can't be helped. So in the time of the Buddha was important, and right down to the present time in Theravada in Asia and Cambodia and Burma and Thailand and Sri Lanka, this practice of loving-kindness has a very important role and place. Some of you might have read about it just a few years ago in Burma, when there was the monks rose up against the government there in street protests, and metta, loving-kindness, was the forefront of their movement. They were chanting a chant of loving-kindness through the streets. They were carrying these kind of banners. This was their rally call, was the loving-kindness. And their efforts to be loving, to have that as a support, has been, not just now, but down through the last decades, a very important kind of rallying point around the liberation or the people who are kind of opposed to the government. So, you know, unfortunately this was met with bullets and jail. But, you know, it's quite something to stand up against the repressive government with loving kindness as the forefront of what you're trying to do. So the Nobel Prize winner, Aung San Suu Kyi, said, as time went on, like a lot of others who've been incarcerated, we have discovered the value of loving kindness. Quite something, huh? While you're in jail. We found that it's one's own feeling of hostility that generates fear. I never felt frightened when I was surrounded by all those hostile troops. That is because I never felt hostility toward them. And one of the classic ideas in Buddhism is that you overcome hostility with loving kindness in yourself and in the world around you. In Sri Lanka, there was a massive kind of protest movement for peace there, the tremendous civil war that they had there for a long time. And the Sarvodaya movement is a kind of a Gandhi-like movement in Sri Lanka. And they would organize these huge protests. And here was one in 2002, I think, of something 170,000 people gathering together to make this protest. and 170,000 people practicing meditation on love. Isn't that kind of neat? It's a lot of people. Mahagusananda has been called the Gandhi of Cambodia, and he also emphasized it. There's a famous story that Jack Kornfield tells, that the reason why Mahagusananda was not killed, most Buddhist monks were killed by the Pol Pot in the 1970s, was he was living in Thailand. And he was practicing there. He'd been a scholar in India and was practicing with Ajahn Chah and people. Jack Kornfield knew him there. And when the Pol Pot was murdering millions of people in Cambodia, there were a lot of people who left as refugees, but the Pol Pot kind of infiltrated, and the refugee camps were on the border. And he was told that if he went back to the refugee camps, they would kill him. And he went anyway. And he and with the help of the refugees in his camp of tens of thousands of people, in the center of it, he built a small kind of wooden temple, Buddhist temple or platform. And then when it was built, he sat in the middle of it, and many, many people, thousands of people came, and he started chanting over and over and over again that verse from the beginning. Hate is never overcome by hate. By love alone is hate overcome. That's the eternal truth. And that's what he apparently chanted over and over again. And these refugees who'd been through so much sat there crying. Probably healing in some ways. I'll skip this quote, but here's another one from Mahagusananda, this Gandhi of Cambodia. Peace is possible. We will build an army of peace whose ammunition will be bullets of loving kindness. So these are people who are kind of, you know, in areas of crisis, great challenges in life. And this is what they're calling on. Calling on as their support, as their rallying, as their way to meet things. These are not people who have comfortable lives and can comfortably sit and just kind of offer love to the world. These are people where what they do has huge consequences. And they've chosen this as the way to go forward. So then, Buddhism comes to the West. And here, I think this is an English monk. And the reason I took this picture was it shows a metta meditation retreat. So here we have now in the West people not only interested in practice, but engaging. Here it's a five-day retreat where 5 days all the people are going to do is to cultivate loving kindness and love. Imagine that, to spend 5 days. Probably some of you have been somewhat absorbed at times with things probably you realize after a while was not healthy for you. Recently I was on the internet a little bit too much. And actually not the internet so much, but on the computer. And I kind of felt, oh, it's too much. I had to go to the gym to recover. Because it's like, and there was, because, you know, and I could feel the pull into it, you know. I couldn't quite stop because my mind wasn't, you know, it was kind of like not my normal mind. I wasn't that long on it, but I could feel the effect. So I don't know, maybe some of you have done something similar where you've done something maybe that you could, you know, affected you in some way because of the doing it a lot of the time. What if you did that much time and more, 5 whole days nonstop, and focused on love? What would that do for you? What kind of momentum, what kind of habit, what kind of state of mind does that create? So this is a practice that has come to the West from the Buddhist tradition in Asia, and we have these loving-kindness retreats. There are some people who learn about the practice of loving-kindness and becomes their primary Buddhist practice, or primary practice. They don't have to be Buddhist to do it. And so so here I chose this as the beginning. One of the things that's nice about this, these four kinds of love, loving kindness, compassion, appreciative joy, and equanimity, is that one of the things I like is that the Buddha, in the ancient scriptures, refers to it as already existing in India before him. So it wasn't didn't originate in the Buddha. He didn't invent love, right? And he just adopted it from what was already there. And in fact, we find in other Indian traditions, like in the Patanjali Suttas, there's references to exactly the same four. So I love it that this, you know, it's not just, you know, kind of a monopoly of the Buddhists, but this actually, and what it means to me is this is a universal human capacity we all have. And when we practice these things or develop them in us, you're not necessarily becoming a Buddhist. You're becoming a human. You're developing human capacity you have. And what Buddhism has to offer in this is not so much the ideas of love, but rather is the technique and the support for doing it intensely, developing that capacity, not leaving your love to chance, but to take some responsibility for the development of it. So it's come to the West. Love has come to the West. How are Buddhist values of love adapted to the West? Here's a book, If the Buddha Dated. So I don't think the Buddha had this in mind when he was talking about love, but so that's one way. Here's the one this is probably nowadays the way that the word metta and the concept of loving kindness has entered into popular American culture with the biggest influence, the biggest kind of notoriety or something, or fame or something, or is this. This is a basketball player on the LA Lakers, and his name used to be Ron Artest, and he changed his name legally, and now his name is Metta World Peace. That's his legal name. You see in the back of his jersey, whatever, it says World Peace, you know, his name, right? But his Metta sort of name, Metta World Peace. And so he's entered into a popular culture, and there's a lot of, he got a lot of press for this, you know, when he made this change. So here it goes a little bit further into our culture. Metta Man, World Peace. And then it became, I originally had a slide in here, but I took it out. There's a photograph of him basically beating some man up on the basketball court, another basketball player. And so this became kind of even bigger news, you know, Metta World Peace, you know, and that's a dramatic photograph of him doing this atrocious act. It was a big scandal, it was a shocking thing. And so, you know, so it's unfortunate maybe for the reputation of Metta and Metta Man, but... But you know, we're all trying to practice. That's why he needed it, because he needed help. So it's coming into our society, whether you want it or not. It's here. It's flying in. It's going to burst into our society, and watch out. But it's not just, you know, on the basketball courts. Here's a Catholic college, Assumption College, a Catholic college. And they have a theater in the college called Metta. And its Metta is an acronym for Marie Eugene Theater of the Assumption. So you think it's just a coincidence, right? But then if you go on the website, it talks about what Metta is. And Metta takes the name from the Pali, which is the Buddhist word for loving kindness and friendliness for all. In the same essence, the Marie Eugene Theater of the Assumption, or Metta, combines drama, dance, and music to allow every artistic possibility. Exactly what that connection is, I'm not sure, but I'm very, very happy they see the connection. So a Catholic college, right? That's quite something to choose this Buddhist word for it. And here, Buddhist Love and Christianity. It's a book, a very nice book. I've read it. Called Gentling the Heart, Buddhist Loving Kindness Practice for Christians. So it's coming in, right? Here it comes. Basketball courts, Christianity, it's happening. And it isn't just the Christians that are taking notice to this Theravadan Buddhist concept of metta. Here's a man who, I don't know if he still is, but he came, you know, there was a wonderful Hindu teacher in Berkeley named Eknath Eswaran in the 60s and 70s, and I first learned about it through Laura's Kitchen, a book, cookbook that came out of his community, back vegetarian cookbook in the 70s. And a great teacher and a great Hindu teacher. And one of his prime disciples started this, the Metta Center for Nonviolence. And this guy's done great work. But here he chose not to, and what's interesting is that usually in Hinduism, coming out of Hinduism, you use a Sanskrit word, which would be Maitri. And he's chosen the Pali word, metta, in order to, for his center. So, okay, outside of religion, How about the world of finance? The Meta Fund, supporting a healthier San Francisco. So San Francisco, right? So, you know, it's probably some new age thing, you know, some anybody can start a fund, right? And you know, it's probably, you know, nothing really to pay attention to. Our history. The Meta Fund traces its history back to 1854, when the German Benevolent Society was established in San Francisco. And they've been involved in establishing many of the major hospitals, number of the major hospitals in San Francisco. And they refer to the Buddhist term metta. They say the Sanskrit language, but it's really Pali. Between the years 1998 and 2009, Metta Fund and the Franklin Benevolent Corporation provided San Francisco nonprofit organizations with over $55 million in funding. This is a, you know, that, to me, that's a serious organization with a lot of money available and doing a lot of good. And they were involved in starting the Davis Medical Center. So, finance. And then we have science, right? We can't have love without science now that, you know, long, I think Proxmire isn't alive anymore, so maybe it's safe. The Metaphysics magazine. I don't know how popular it is, you know. it's a web magazine, but I thought it was quite lovely, you know. I don't know what meta, again, has to do with physics, but basketball courts, theater, arts, grant-making, physics, I'm anywhere, I'm happy to love anywhere. But clearly, they refer to the Buddhist idea of loving-kindness. It says, metta, the traditional Buddhist terminology for loving-kindness, is perhaps the best starting point in the search for personal meaning, easily integrated with a scientific worldview. So it's very adaptable, this idea. So then we have also, maybe not too surprising, but we have in America now a lot of yoga centers with the word metta as their title. Metta Yoga in Kentucky, Metta Yoga in Arizona, Metta Yoga in Indiana, Metta Massage and Yoga Clinic in Canada. And I kind of thought it was kind of interesting, you know, Kentucky and Indiana are, you know, are sometimes a little harder for these foreign influences to come in than it is in San Francisco, so. I thought it was kind of interesting. Metta and Wellness. Metta Day Spa in Georgia. Metta Wellness Center in Colorado. Metta Integrative Wellness Center in Maryland. Metta Counseling Service in North and South Carolina. Metta Station Massage in Georgia. So that's nice. Good getting in there, right? So you begin to get a sense. This concept of metta, of loving kindness, is taken. People are taking notice of it. And it's starting to enter our society in a certain way. So then we go back to Buddhism. We have Zen, Japanese Zen. And Japanese Zen, when I was trained at the San Francisco Zen Center, I don't remember them ever talking about loving kindness. They talked about compassion, but loving kindness, sympathetic joy, equanimity, these kinds of love were never talked about. The word love, I don't remember being spoken. Compassion, some little bit. And the Zen Center, the Zen Japanese Zen background in India is a Sanskrit tradition. So they would use, if they refer to their Indian origins, they'll use Sanskrit words for it. So the Sanskrit word for metta is maitri. And the Pali is metta. The Pali comes from a Buddhist tradition that for hundreds and hundreds of years, people like the Zen traditions distance themselves from. We're not those people. Because, you know, they're the Hinayana, the lesser vehicle, right? So that's what, that's the history of it, right? But here's what Zen Center has done. Metta adopted and adapted the word metta and the practice of metta for their recovery program. They have an alcohol recovery program, and they found this is a useful thing, and they used a Pali word. So that's interesting. They probably learned it from the Pali sources. They probably learned it from the Theravada teachers, the Vipassana teachers, because they didn't have it in their own tradition. Not in that clear way. Zen Center also, I kind of stopped practicing at Zen Center pretty much in the 80s, late 80s. But by the mid-90s, they were chanting the Metta Sutta. The discourse in the Metta, the Buddha has a discourse, it's about a page long. It's a poem, it's a beautiful poem about the practice of loving kindness. And it's often chanted in the Theravada tradition. And lo and behold, Zen Center now is chanting it as their morning liturgy. It's part of the liturgy. So it's got, you know, entered into even this, you know. So where else could it go in America? What's one of the more American things in America nowadays, at least for some people, especially of a certain sexual orientation? The National Buddhist Committee on Scouting, they have a Metta Award. And this is, they have an award for every religion. It allows these kids to, if they do some study and learn something about their religion, they can get a badge for their religion. And so for Buddhism, you can get a Metta Award. And so that's nice. But what's also interesting is that the people who went to the scouts and said, we'd like to do this Buddhist Metta Award, were Japanese Buddhists of the Japanese Pure Land tradition. And again, they have nothing to do with Pali tradition and metta and, you know, that word. But they decided that was the word to represent metta and Buddhism here in the West. Not a Japanese word, not the Sanskrit word which their tradition comes out of, but this word here, metta. And we had a boy who came, and there was one Buddhist priest, Japanese Pure Land priest, who was administrating this for the scouts. And he used to live 10 years ago in San Mateo. And there was a boy who wanted to get the Metta Award. And so he came here to me here and met with me a few times to go to get his religious training or teaching or whatever. And then I had to sign off and send this guy in San Mateo. And the boy got his badge. So this is what the scouting people say about the emblems. The Metta program is to help Cub Scouts to further their knowledge and practice of the Buddhist religion. The word Metta is a Buddhist term meaning loving kindness and goodwill. This word was selected as the name for the award with the hope of nurturing boys who will relate to animate and inanimate things with loving kindness and goodwill in their hearts. Isn't that great? And so I think, you know, it's kind of beautiful that what they chose as the emblem for Buddhism was a word that means goodwill for all. And then the metta belongs to the Theravada, you know, the word is a Pali word which comes out of the Theravada Buddhist tradition. And so there's a Theravada monastery in San Diego County called the Metta Forest Monastery. Maybe not surprising given that metta is their word and their concept and all that. What's a little bit surprising is that for a Thai monastery, it's apparently very unusual to have such a short name. So they usually have very long names. And so somehow they snuck in under the radar and they took this short name, Metta, for themselves. So how is this loving kindness entering into our society, into America? There's another way of studying this, and that is through the frequency of the use of the word in books. How often does the word metta appear, right? So, or loving kindness appear? Is it growing? Is love becoming more popular over time? Google has a service called Ngram Viewer. And Ngram Viewer allows you to search through all of the Google books. They've scanned all these books, millions of books. And you can just quickly scan through them. You can put in a few words, and then they'll scan and see how many times that word appears in the percentage of all the books over a particular year, a period of time. And so you can see trends, and you can see whether a word is being used more or less or what's happening with it. So you can try this. You can go home and do it. It's fun. And so you can do this Ngram Viewer search for the word loving kindness. And if you do it, from 1940 to 2008, look at what happens to the frequency of loving kindness. And it starts going up just after 1980. What happened in 1980? What went on? The first loving kindness retreat that I know of in the United States was in 1988. So before the start to go up. But what happened there? So you can do other things. So an n-gram viewer here, if you look at, so it looks kind of dramatic, right, how it goes up. But you also have to realize the scale. And so here, and the next one is 1700 to 1970. So there's a book that Google has, going back to the 1700s. And look what happened. Is it 1820? Loving kindness peaked in 1820, dramatically. And it's mostly been downhill ever since. You know, and if it goes up, it's not going up much compared to, you know, how, you know, it isn't that there were more occurrences in 1820, but in terms of the percentage of usage in books, it was much higher, much popular in the books at the time. So, and then if you then do all the way to 2008, you see the upturn here. It's going up, but we have a ways to get back to the 1820s. So what's going on? So you can do something very interesting in Google, in this n-gram viewer. If you look down to the bottom line, you see all the dates there? So if you click on those dates, then you can see all the books that Google, they're searching through. And you can see the occurrence of the word. So you can start seeing. So you can do this. 1814 to 1821, 12,000 results. The first four things that pop up all have to do about God's loving kindness for us. All the reference points are all Christian, and it all has to do God's infinite, wonderful loving kindness. That's the focus point. So probably what in all those books in 1820, there was something, that's maybe the Great Awakening in America. It's a very important time of religion. Probably loving kindness. God's love for us was really paramountly important, and that's the emphasis. So you do the same thing for more recent times. You can, and so I did it for 1975 to 2011. Now look at the top four. Three of the top four are Buddhist books. And now the emphasis is not God's loving kindness towards us, but the loving kindness that we can have for the world. The translators who chose the word loving kindness for metta were probably influenced by the Bible. You know, loving kindness was a very important religious term, but the direction of loving kindness was very different. Rather than what we receive from God, it's what we offer others. So here we see now that something has changed dramatically. And now, rather than being Christian references, we have Buddhist ones as being comes up first. And then if you look more recently, in 2007-2008, something different, interesting happens. And the second book is a book by a Buddhist teacher. All the other ones, I don't know about this, the Ashdown Flower Show, that's 1873, it's a reprint of something, I don't know what that's about. But the other ones are kind of in the self-help genre. So rather than being Buddhism predominating for how the occurrence of loving kindness appears, it's self-help. So what's happened? What's changed? So here, we're almost finished. 2005 was when there was published the first research studies on loving kindness. So these are clinical studies. So for example, loving kindness meditation for chronic low back pain. Results from a pilot trial. So this is a big kind of sea change. Now, the practice of loving kindness as a practice, as a meditation practice, coming out of this Theravadan Buddhist tradition, practice of metta, has now gotten the attention of people who are looking for how it can benefit people psychologically and physically. Similar to what happened with the Buddhist, similar Buddhist practice from Theravadan of mindfulness. And that was started in 1980 or so with Jon Kabat-Zinn. And that left the Buddhism and became secularized and became a popular practice in many hospitals around the country now. And so we have, now we're beginning to see the same thing starting to happen with loving kindness. People are repackaging and seeing, and this is a beneficial practice. It doesn't have to be considered a Buddhist practice. And now people are trying to figure out, how is it beneficial? How can it help people with depression and all kinds of issues? And now we're getting more and more of these studies being published. So this self-help books, these research are showing that it's spreading out into our culture outside of the domain of Buddhism. I hope I can do this. I probably can't, but let's see. So here, it's a little bit going back in time. Now we're back to 1965, about, maybe 65. Some of you who are old enough will know, remember this. So he has four songs, jazz songs, in this piece, and they're called Love, Compassion, Joy, and I think it's Serenity. It's his version of the four Brahma-viharas. So this is what I want to see if... Can I do this? I wanted to play. See if I can... I don't know where it is. It disappeared. I have to reload. It won't allow me to refresh. It just... Oh, here I can do it. Yeah, okay. Here we go. And then the last slide. Colonial American architecture. With the words Metta engraved in it. And this is the Insight Meditation Center in Massachusetts. When they bought it for the meditation center, that they put the Metta up there. So it's on its way. It'll be at street corners and malls close to you very soon. And I'm hoping that you'll spread this wonderful thing and help. I think that our society could use a lot more friendliness and goodwill, and that if we can generate and cultivate goodwill in ourselves and spread it and encourage other people to have it, I know that we'll have a better society. And I think also we'll have stronger people. I think that developing our capacity for love is not a weakness, but is a tremendous power and strength. And who knows? Just like Mahagusananda and the monks in Burma and people in Sri Lanka, maybe a day will come where we'll really need it. So we better be ready. May we all be happy, and may we wish each other tremendous amount of goodwill and happiness. Thank you.